Hello and welcome to another edition of the Culture File Weekly with me, Luke Clancy, where we're back, lighting out over open seas after a few weeks of hugging the familiar curves of the coastline. This week, we're engaging in some deep mapping, deep in the woods at Lismore with artist Deirdre O'Mahony. We'll join designer and artist Miriam Riand in Doolan, where a festival aims to assist musicians who want to build careers from rural Ireland. And we'll get under the bonnet of Beethoven's late quartets with composer Amanda Feary. But we begin by observing that at this time the captain has switched on the fasten seatbelt sign. In this passage of media turbulence, there's no shortage of visions for the future of newspapers. Many of these are apocalyptic, but others have been taking the opportunity to think about how new relationships between journalists, readers, and money could improve the media sphere. One new but old take on the business comes in the shape of the Dublin Inquirer, a Dublin-based newspaper that has a zero advertising approach, indeed actively refuses advertising requests and supports itself entirely through reader subscriptions. One sign of the approach that might tell you all you need to know is that the Dublin Inquirer has an unreal estate rather than a real estate section. If some papers are ever in the thrall of the sellers of property, the Inquirer is clearly aligned with the renters, or would-be renters in the capital. Culture File's Louis Scully went to meet the Inquirer's editor, Lois Capilla, for some lessons in what she calls slow journalism.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of more into the slower journalism. So what we're trying to do is in-depth reporting and taking time over reporting rather than trying to get stuff out as fast as possible. We're really trying to do stories that wouldn't be told otherwise. And lots of on-the-ground reporting, because I think the news can be a little bit alienating, so it's quite good to tie what's going on and more abstract debates back to actual people and places in the city. I'm Lois Capilla, and I edit and report for Dublin Inquirer. The Dublin Inquirer is a local independent newspaper, and we do city reporting and also collaborative journalism projects when we can, and it's funded by our readers rather than advertisers. We publish weekly online and monthly in print. We've got a pretty smallish core team, so two full-time reporters and then me doing kind of a lot of the admin and business stuff as well as some reporting, and then Sam, my husband, has a full-time job but also helps out. And then a broader universe of people who freelance and pitch stories, and we're really open to freelance pitches. Ideally, I would have us grow our staff a little bit, but not necessarily grow the number of stories too much so that we can spend more time doing longer projects.
Where does the Dublin Inquirer fall in terms of political leaning?
I'm sure people have their opinions about where we stand on the political spectrum. I am actually, don't think about that. I'm more process driven. So I guess what I try to do in the stories is we try to talk to as many people as possible, and we try to get to as close to the truth as possible, and then we write what all the different views are, and not two sides of views, because stories have five or six sides or seven sides. Like, it's not a polarized debate like that. We've been doing a lot of stories about land and land in the city, and also like land and lobbying around sort of policies around land and the Land Development Agency. Just because it's so fundamental to how the city will change, and it's so fundamental to how some people are so wealthy and some people aren't. And it's really challenging to write about that in a way that's kind of interesting, so that's something that I'm trying to think about. You know, there's the whole thing of, oh, how much should media try to be entertaining, but trying to write things in a way that's accessible is part of it. I guess we think a lot, not just about the reporting side of things, but also about the craft and how we can present things in a way that are enjoyable and lovely to read. Yeah. We kind of, from looking at what was going on, and particularly what was going on overseas, realised that we weren't going to be an advertising-funded newspaper. But we thought we'd need, like, an incentive for people to support us, which is why we started the print edition, and also because a lot of our stories are longer-term evergreen stories, so it lends itself to those kinds of formats as well. We put up a sort of semi-metered sort of paywall on the website just to encourage people or make it more obvious that we are reader-supported. But then if people can't afford it, then we just let them have access anyway, because the last thing we wanted to do was to, like, cut people out. Some people then pay, like, a reduced rate. Some people have it for free. Some people have been really lovely. Like, they couldn't afford it for a while, and then they got a job and they paid all their back payments, even though they didn't have to. It's a really long runway. Like, it's kind of slow. We're growing every month. I try to just stay focused on doing what I think we should be doing and trying to just keep going with that and not get too distracted by what everybody else is doing, beyond, like, keeping an eye, obviously, on what stories people are doing so we're not doing the same and all that kind of stuff. We're not massively part of that media world, so I think we just try to get on with it. Like, yeah.
Dublin Inquirer editor Lois Capilla there, and the reporter was Louis Scully. Now, 2020 is going to be a big year for Beethoven, or more honestly, for his fans. With the 250th anniversary of the composer's birth, halls around the country are filling with his music right from the off, with Galway 2020's Beethoven event starting on Friday and the first part of the Ergodos-curated Beethoven Reflected season kicking off in Dublin and Cork. Beethoven Reflected features new commissions by Irish composers, among them our guest this time, Amanda Feary, all created in response to Beethoven's string quartets. Amanda Feary told Culturefile's Gallagher about getting under the bonnet of the late quartets for her new work.
The piece that I've composed for the Beethoven Reflected concert with Ficino Ensemble is called From Ashes. The piece that I responded to, the string quartet, is the string quartet in A minor, number 15.
It's one of his last quartets that he wrote, and therefore being one of his last major works that he wrote. At the time they were written, they were kind of dismissed. Now they're regarded amongst the best classical music. They're very, I guess, emotionally developed.
I think what you said about emotion is kind of what draws me in. I'm not like a process composer. I think the intuitive side of composition has never left me. So the Beethoven works, whether it's string quartets or symphonies or other works that I tend to respond to, are where I can hear whether it's joy or something darker than that. They tend to be the works that I respond to, and I can hear that in the later pieces, whether that responds to something autobiographical in Beethoven's life, I'm not sure. It's not something I can pin down, but I sort of, when I hear it, I kind of will respond emotionally to it as well. There's also, I think, a lot of elegance in the late quartets that I hear too. The harmonic language, I think, sometimes with a lot of Beethoven's later work, but the string quartets in particular as well, it's sort of like these double takes for the ears sometimes, where we're kind of in one key and then we're in a completely different area. I took a seminar on Beethoven in university, and one angle of the seminar was kind of analysing wrong notes. And in some of the string quartets we looked at, there was just these surprising wrong notes, in inverted commas, come in these really surprising ways. But it always comes back to Beethoven and his genius at like a small cell, whether it's a harmonic or a melodic cell figure. That always comes back, but I think harmonically in surprising ways. The part in the first movement, these two short cadence points that I kind of used as these springboards into what I thought could work with completely different material that was kind of disconnected from the original Beethoven string quartet. So they're only about a bar or two long, and they kind of open the piece. These short cadence points that I revoice in my own string quartet are just one or two bars long. They kind of come at the end of these phrases and they're quite dramatic. Quite homophonic, quite chordal, not a lot of melodic material, but they really punch through the texture of the quartet, and they kind of recur several times in the first movement. And I just found myself being particularly drawn to those short points. I used that material to open my own string quartet. I was also really drawn into the harmonies and the harmonic movement of the third movement of the string quartet. It's very beautiful, very slow moving, like a chorale almost. And I'm quite drawn to first inversion chords a lot of the time in classical music, but when I hear them occur in pop or rock music as well, I always find that I'm quite drawn to them. I think there's an unresolved tension that's inherent in the first inversion chord that I've always quite liked.
So coming back to your piece, From Ashes, are we expecting to hear a kind of distorted version of the atmosphere that Beethoven describes in his quartet number 15?
So the opening is a pretty direct taking of those cadence points that I took. They're pinned kind of against each other harmonically, not the same as how Beethoven approached it. So you've got two harmonic areas jarring up against each other at the beginning. What happens then later in the piece, I also had this strong visual image of if you're travelling in a car on a train and you have light and objects kind of flickering through branches and other objects. So there are things being obscured and there's a certain animation and there's a certain rhythm that I get from that visual image. So that kind of inspired some of the material in the lower strings. So they're always kind of flickering away. The upper strings then, they take obscured melodic material from the first movement of the Beethoven string quartet. That texture kind of works its way towards an exploration of more of the harmonic material then from the third movement. That's kind of how the piece develops then.
Do you enjoy working with something like, let's say, a limitation of four stringed instruments, or do you find it a bit constrictive?
No, not at all. I would love to. I still feel like I haven't wrote the string quartet yet, that I've got to have such a deep exploration with the material. Maybe it'll come in the next few years. It's only in the last few years that I've become a lot more comfortable with writing for strings and exploring that world. So I've never, with the string quartet, felt limited in terms of the overall range that you can work with, in terms of the different sound qualities, the different types of bowing and plucking and different styles of playing. If anything, it sometimes feels limitless in a way.
Amanda Feary there, talking to Áine Gallagher. And From Ashes premieres at the Triscoll Cork this coming Saturday at 1 p.m, then in the Hugh Lane Gallery Dublin on Sunday at noon. Both dates feature the Ficino Quartet with Amanda Feary, Cora Venus Lunny, Benedict Schlepper Connolly and Garrett Scholdice. The Music Minds Festival, taking place in Doolin this weekend, describes itself as a place for musical minds to gather, network, learn and be entertained. Now in its second year, this Western gathering goes beyond putting on a show, though there are plenty of those, to provide the slightly less rock and roll knowledge and networks that allow music to flourish. So the weekend contains music, but also everything from software workshops, talks on promotion, marketing and design from specialists such as our guest this time, Miriam Rian. Rient has previously collaborated creating images for the music of singer-songwriter and Culturefile contributor Louise McMahon. No better pair then to discuss the business of capturing music in images and launching a musical career from rural Ireland.
2020 is up to a great start for me. I just launched my website, so I'm really excited about that. I purged all my old work and I'm trying to focus on music work. So I used to work as a graphic designer in Dublin, and I did a bit of freelance graphic design as well, focusing more on corporate work.
What was the difference between being in Dublin and trying to promote your work and being in the sticks of County Clare and trying to promote your work?
I found myself lost in the corporate world in Dublin, and I got so caught up in working. I worked as a graphic designer for an event management agency and I really enjoyed it, but I found myself having no time to do any personal work. So I'm still grateful for that time, because I did learn so much about client relationships, pitching, working with an amazing art team. But then I kind of forgot what I was all about, I suppose. So when I got back to Clare, it was like I was re-immersed in this amazing scene of arts and music. I kind of have been doing this for nearly 2 years, and it just seems that word of mouth, that's the only way I've promoted myself.
What was your first commission?
For a band called The Fiddle Case, they approached me asking if I could design and photograph artwork for their new album. So this was not a print project, which is really interesting for me. It was to just create artwork for online release, because all the artwork has to be adapted to different platforms. So for example, once you have a photo shoot, there might be like the album artwork, and then there might be like a different version to put on YouTube, and some bands opt to do even like lightly animated versions of the artwork, which is really interesting, because movement is such a huge thing on social media now. You're scrolling down on Facebook and you're attracted to things that are moving. People aren't stopping as much on still images anymore. So a lot of artists would use a slightly animated version of the album artwork to capture the attention of the scroller.
You always handed back images of me that made me look so good that it gave me so much confidence in my music. Because when I was thinking about releasing a song into the world, I was confident that, okay, this is the artwork that's going with it, and I feel comfortable with people associating that artwork with my song, and it all kind of looks good as a package. So yeah, you're definitely a huge part of my career as well.
Thank you. And I think what you're saying about the image associated with the music is such an important thing. And I think a lot of musicians don't realize it. Sometimes they get so caught up in the music creation aspect of it. And I know myself as well, when I get caught up in a project, I forget about everything else, and I'm just so focused on it. And then when it comes to time to release it, I don't think of all the collateral. So when it comes to music, I think having a strong visual associated with the music is so important, especially now on social media. Using Photoshop is actually really interesting. It would be the main program for image making rather than designing things from scratch. I just love it, because you can't predict what's going to happen. It's always a surprise. That's the way I like to approach image making, is just not knowing what's going to happen. I just look around my folders, pick a texture at random, pick some colors at random, and just throw them all together and see what happens. It would just surprise a lot of people I work with, and I don't have a plan per se. I like to have like a rough idea of what I'm doing or what I want to do, but it's definitely the creativity found in the process and in the doing of the photo shoot and the doing of the editing. That's when the magic happens, I suppose. It's just like, oh, I don't know where this came from, but it just happened. That's what I love about it.
Miriam Rehan there talking to Louise McMahon, and that Music Minds Festival is happening right now in Doolin and all over the weekend. musicmindsfestival.ie for all the necessaries. And finally on this week's Weekly, can we get out of the woods by going into the woods? Artist Deirdre O'Mahony's latest project, Tangled Web at Lismore Castle, sees her leading a series of what she calls investigative trips to perform some deep mapping of the forests around Lismore in an attempt to create a new relationship with place. The project runs through the spring, and last weekend, Culture File's Aoinya Gallagher joined one group of locals walking and deep mapping alongside the artist and leading the way, photographer and naturalist Paddy Dwan.
We must do a dusk chorus out here, or a dawn chorus. Now, they're all linnets. They're little flocks of linnets, so they're a small thrush-like bird. They're kind of nondescript. They have a slightly reddish hint on the breast, but it's a song. It's a song that's beautiful. And there they go. Lovely, brilliant. Thank you very much. It's on cue.
It really struck me when I was first invited to be a part of the project was the extraordinary diversity of trees that you get there and the scale of the forests around Lismore. My name is Deirdre O'Mahony. I'm an artist. I'm working here in Lismore on a project for Lismore Castle Arts called A Place for Lismore. My project is called Forest Culture, Tangled Web. And it's really about the human and non-human entanglements that go to make up places. And looking at that through the kind of lens of different types of forest that surround Lismore Castle and the local nearby vicinity.
But the moss doesn't do the tree any harm at all. That myth of the moss growing on the north or south facing, don't ever try and find your directions by that, because you're going to be in a lot of trouble. It will grow where there's light, like a lot of things. That tree is getting oldish now. You see how much moss cover is on it, and the moss grows up with the tree as well. So it's an indication as well of how old a tree can be sometimes, you know, and with the bark as well. So the moss, it's a lovely thing. It's not doing any harm.
There seems to be a specific kind of communication available with the trees that you don't really get with other plants. I think it's very obvious to look at them how old they are, and that has something to do with it. So you can really imagine a lifespan of a tree.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the first walk that we did, the focus was very much on the forest as a kind of marker of time. And that was in the estate forest belonging to Lismore Castle. And, you know, it's one of the oldest kind of conscious plantations in Ireland. So you have trees there that are documented. You know, their planting was documented in the 1770s, 1780s. You have almost the fashions in silviculture present there. So from the earliest plantation through to kind of 18th and 19th century exotic species that would have been brought back from different travels.
The chestnut tree, horse chestnut tree. Well, you know the big flower that's on that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's called a candle because it's like kind of like a candelabra, isn't it? But each of those flowers, the next time you see those in the spring, look at them, and it's one way or the other. So they're all hanging down, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flowers. So have a look at those, and either the stem and the centre part of each of the tiny flowers, which each of these candles is made up of, it's either yellow or pink, one or the other. Now, when that's visited by a bee, it will change from pink to yellow or yellow to pink, so that a bee won't be wasting his time going to visit it again. And also, I'm fertilised, don't be bothered to head off and do busy. But that's how amazing this whole world is that we live in. That we won't waste any time, energy. I'm fertilised, don't bother to be.
This is all taking place over quite a short period of time, really, essentially 2 months. For the next 3 weeks, there'll be more walks. which provide the information, the research, the visual information that will then feed into a collaborative exhibition in St. Carthage Hall in Lismore, which will be a kind of archive and mapping of the different histories, the different signifiers and signs of human and non-human interactions in the forests. Because a lot of the work I do is around the future of rural places, and I think forestry has a really big role to play in that. It's not just about the experience of being in a place, it's also about trying to imagine how we might better understand the future potential of a place, and if the countryside is to be more than a destination for people like myself and yourself to come and enjoy the nature, then it has to have an economic future, because it's about more than the countryside being a place to go and experience nature. It's about sustaining rural communities, places like Capoquin and Lismore, as livable, as viable communities that people can live in and work in.
Yeah, and it's also very important that people learn how to move around nature in a way that's not just looking at it. And like, nature isn't something that you look at, it's something that we're all part of, and you need to absorb it in these ways and communicate with it.
Absolutely. And you know, today you had a really beautiful example of that with the walk that Paddy gave, which was, you know, yes, he was giving us information, but he was also, his ears were so attuned to the sounds of the forest, to the bird, but in particular the bird song, that he opened our ears and our eyes to these very quiet moments in the forest that otherwise we wouldn't have been aware of.
Deirdre O'Mahony there, finishing that report from Áine Gallagher, and you heard also from Paddy Dwan. And that exhibition based on the artist's Forest Walks will run from the 28th of February to the 8th of March at St. Carthage Hall at Lismore. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more arboreal sorties same time next week on RTÉ Lyric FM. Till then, bye now.